Hello, everyone,
How's
and
the progress?
welcome to the big show. I'm Jeff Gamet. I am your interim host. I'm sitting in for Ewan Rankin, and with me today, I have our top tier. I mean, clearly our top tier, and I won't finish that statement. So everyone can create their own headcanon for what top tier that Ben and Tom are. Anyhow, Ben, how are you today?
I'm in a lot of pain, but ready to do this show.
You know, what a trooper. You're showing up in serious pain, and when we get to the physical part where we all have to do like the big arm lifts and arm rotations and
what?
stuff, you're going to be right in there.
What?
Yeah. A surprise.
Yes. Second thought.
Big show physical edition.
Ben, <Yeah. out. laughs>
Well, it was great having Ben on the show. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jeff. I'm the wife and I are getting ready to embark on a road trip Saturday for a couple of weeks in the car, heading north up towards Oregon and Washington. And the most interesting part is we're going to camp in a couple spots along the way. First place for camping is near Bend, Oregon.
Okay.
And so I checked the weather, you know, is it going to be hot or cold? It gets hot in eastern Oregon in the summertime. And of course, the day we're staying overnight at the campground near Bend, Oregon, is the hottest day over the 2 week period. It's going to be 99 degrees F. So,
holy crap.
35, 36 centigrade. So I'm not sure how we're going to handle that. Maybe we'll drink a lot. I don't know.
Yeah. Holy crap. Yeah.
99 problems, but having to drink water ain't one.
Right. Oh my gosh. Okay. And let's see. All right. So I just noticed I was having a little bit of choppiness on my end, and I think I just fixed it. We'll see.
Don't want to be choppy during the podcast. That's
no,
bad luck.
No, I mean, we're consummate professionals here.
All right, we're not doing a claymation show, right?
Right? Mm-hmm. Right? To the best of
our
knowledge.
That would be kind of awesome.
That would be kind of awesome, yeah. Hey, speaking of road trips, next week I'm gone. I won't be around for the big show or the Mac show because on Thursday I'm flying out to Chicago for MacStock conference.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so that'll be a lot of fun. And so Thursday is travel day and then the Midwest barbecue, and then Friday we're all caravanning from Chicago up to Woodstock, Illinois, where Groundhog Day was filmed. And then we'll be there through the weekend because that's where the conference is, and it's going to be awesome. For everyone that's coming to the conference, I am so looking forward to seeing you. For those of you that can't be there and you've picked up a virtual pass, okay, I'm looking forward to virtually seeing you. And for those of you that don't have a virtual pass, there's still time for that. So anyhow, it's going to be an awesome time, and people that you know besides me are going to be there from the Mac show. Chuck Joyner and Dave Ginsberg are both speaking, and I believe there's some people that are coming over from Europe just to attend the conference. So yeah. So I'm looking forward to that.
It's nice of that guy, Max Jagger, to allow you guys to use the farm for the conference. That's really cool.
Right. Right.
3 days of peace and love, right?
3 days, peace and love, rolling around in the mud, making out with whoever we want and not remembering because we are so stoned.
That's it.
Which might actually be legal in Illinois.
Well, I'm coming from Colorado, so I expect that to be legal. That's just how it works. Doesn't Colorado immunity just follow me to every state?
Absolutely.
There is an airport. It actually might be in O'Hare, where there's an amnesty bin. And it's so that people that have marijuana with them have a secure receptacle where they can dispose of it, no questions asked, and no criminal prosecution.
Really? In Arrivals? Yes.
I think it's at Arrivals. I don't know. A friend sent me the photo and maybe it was at Departures. I'm speculating because of the time frame of when they sent it to me. I think they would have been flying back out. Anyhow, yeah.
Might be a good opportunity to hang out by that bin and pick up some items if you're so inclined.
Put on a professional looking jacket and hat and tell everyone that you are the person that actually puts contents into the bin to make sure that it's properly disposed of, and then you just kind of act like you're throwing it in and it goes in your pocket, and step three, you've sold a lot of stuff and made money. Capitalism is an amazing thing. Yeah. All right. Well, it's the three of us today, and I'm betting that both of you have a story, so I'm waiting to see who gets the first story into the live chat. And I just realized at some point I have to fumble through explaining to people where to find that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can't wait for that moment.
Right. Okay. Tom, tell us about your story, please.
My story today is, surprise, it's about semiconductors. I know I don't usually do that. This story is from the Next Platform, and it's about a group which includes a couple of universities, University of Washington up in Seattle, and I think the guy now works at Microsoft. But what they've come up with is a low-power chip design to do AI inferencing at the edge.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to do that with chiplets. And so if we back up and say, you know, AI is great, or it is has great potential, let me say, I don't think it's really that great right now in consumer use anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two parts to AI. One is you train a model, you know, like create something like an LLM that OpenAI and Bing and Google Bard and all that. The second part is when you want to use that model, you have to use an inference engine. And it's basically it's software running on a processor to feed it some of the inputs that you give it into that model that you created somewhere else and get the result that you want. The training side of AI is really compute intense. And that, you know, for big models generally runs on big farms of CPUs, you know, hundreds of GPUs and CPUs. Takes a lot of time. Inferencing is still today, if you just use a regular CPU, can be pretty compute intensive. And we've seen some companies, you know, Apple and others, that have created, I guess you'd call them custom processors to do inferencing. And there was also a company I mentioned a couple of months back called Cerebras, which was creating a big wafer scale processor that was made up of hundreds of individual CPUs that were all tied together on this one monolithic wafer. And they were positioning that as an AI processor. And it's not a bad idea. Instead of having blades and blades of CPUs, you can put hundreds of CPUs on a single wafer. It has a lot of advantages for power and performance and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys, what they decided was to take sort of the wafer scale idea, but instead of actually trying to process that whole wafer, which has a lot of manufacturing challenges, their idea is create a big wafer, but only pick the individual processors that are actually yielding well, that got manufactured correctly, and cutting them up and putting them multiple of those chiplets, they call them, single die, into a single package and create a, you know, a multi-CPU inference engine that runs at relatively low power. So the overall architecture of the CPU is low power, and it's focused on only doing inferencing, you know, a little bit like what Apple's done on, I think they talked to, I forget the name of the processor. They have the media processor, and they have, I can't remember the name, but most companies have some block on their CPU that just does inferencing now. But this is really kind of a cool idea. So ultimately, one day we can have phones and laptops and wireless routers and refrigerators where you can apply AI and do the inferencing in a more practical way. And the fact that this guy now works for Microsoft gives you some hint of where it might lead.
All right. So would I be correct in assuming that a logical path for this is that when it reaches the consumer level where we have it, say, in our computers and in our smartphones, that that our computers, our devices will be able to learn more about how we use those devices and then anticipate our needs better?
Right. Right. So one example that I read about somewhere is in a Wi-Fi router. You know, Wi-Fi is kind of black magic. You know, it sort of works, sort of doesn't. You get, mm-hmm. you know, transient interference and all that kind of stuff. So even you not doing anything, if you had a model, if somebody created a model for a Wi-Fi router and the environment that it works in and how to react to different problems, you know, if you turn on the microwave, you know, is there a way to phase shift the Wi-Fi router to avoid that or something? Basically, that can be done, you know, super quick, automatically, if the Wi-Fi router's got a better model of that. To create, you know, kind of a more traditional piece of software that could handle that would be really tough. And same thing maybe for your thermostat or your refrigerator. If you know, a Nest thermostat can kind of learn your preferences and all that, but it's pretty mundane the way the algorithm that they use to try to figure out what your habits are and how your house reacts to turning on the heater and so on. Mm-hmm. You know, theoretically, an AI model with a simple inference engine could operate much better.
Okay. And as you're throwing out examples, it occurred to me, if this is something that's in like everyone's Wi-Fi router, this would be really great in a place where you have a high density, say like an apartment complex. Mm-hmm. Now, the Wi-Fi routers are basically learning from each other so that they can better utilize the frequencies and minimize interference.
That would be really cool. I mean, I guess mm-hmm. even if you're in a, let's say you're in a business environment where you had buildings with, you know, one company that controlled a bunch of Wi-Fi routers, you could actually make modifications. But maybe if everybody in your building had a Netgear router or whatever, and they were all had this ability, you could do that.
Okay, that'd be really cool.
Or some kind of mesh standard.
Or meshing. Meshing is probably a better example, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because meshing, you have to do a lot of stuff on the fly to figure out, you know, who's going to dominate the signal and how they configure themselves, but even on the fly.
So this technology right here is really, really new. So we're still, what, years away from where we can see this in consumer products?
Maybe. It may not be that far off, because actually, you know, using this particular chip might take a little while, and it looks like it's going to be driven by Microsoft. That's why I brought up the Microsoft angle. They must have some idea of how they might want to use it, given that they funded this research and hired the guy. And I have no idea what end product they're targeting, but it wouldn't take that long. You know, the basics of AI and how to use it, people understand the software exists. It would just be that they would have a different piece of hardware that would open up a lot more possibilities. So maybe people are already working on similar solutions today, and this is kind of a little booster. So it might not be years and years. It might just be months and months if it is actually turns out to be really valuable.
Okay. Well, and this isn't something where it has to be just on your local device. This can be on the back end too.
Could be, but you know, inference is generally, you know, would be on the edge.
Okay.
You know, because, well, I guess you could use it, you know, maybe that's what Microsoft is looking at. Instead of buying thousands of NVIDIA GPUs, if they can customize this processor to do the inferencing that Bing wants to do, they could theoretically replace a bunch of NVIDIA GPUs for inferencing when people are doing Bing searches with AI, or, you know, the Word doc, you know, Microsoft 365 features. If that's running on Azure, they could do it with these little devices. And we all know that if they can save a bunch of power in the data center in Azure, that's a big deal.
That's a really big deal.
Yeah. And so I don't know, you know, on their workloads, how much of their Azure AI CPU farms are used for training versus inferencing. But I would guess if they've got it in Bing and they, you know, they have a lot of people typing in searches into an AI enabled Bing, that's a lot of inferencing happening all day long.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's really cool.
And you know, Google is trying to do the same thing. They're trying to create some chips to do both training and inferencing. And they just had kind of a misstep. Their latest chip turns out, I guess it doesn't work. Unfortunately.
I can see where that would be a problem.
That would be a problem.
Yeah. All right. Well, then, Ben, let's talk about your piece because it kind of fits in with all this too.
Yes. Yeah, we go from it chips from large language models to the federal government investigating large language models.
Whoops-a-daisy.
So the FDA has started they're investigating OpenAI, the company known for ChatGPT, over their data collection techniques. And basically, the BS results that large language models sometimes give you.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, there was a 20-page letter sent to OpenAI, basically asking questions on how it develops and trains its languages. It also wants information on security of those of that data. And
so OpenAI has been pretty transparent, as far as I know, about where they're scraping data to train their model. So for that part, I'm not sure what this investigation is hoping to get.
It sounds like it's more about how are companies like OpenAI going to protect consumers who get bad information from their software?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's the other part of this. Where are they getting
and
data?
I think the question about the source of the data is related to, you know, I think people that don't quite understand this think if you can eliminate all the training data, which is false, then what you get out of it is going to be accurate, which is not the case.
Yeah. Plus, you could feed it.
You could feed it perfectly accurate information, but if you ask it a question that it doesn't have a direct answer to, and it tries to infer something, an LLM can often lead you astray.
Yeah.
So if it, you know, if you ask a question like, is it okay to, you know, light a cigarette next to an open can of gasoline? For some reason, it says, sure, that's okay. and a person does it and they blow up, is OpenAI liable for that?
Yeah.
Hopefully you would get that question right.
I would hope. However, knowing the small amount that I know about how these systems work, there's no reason to expect that an LLM will ever get any answer correct. I mean, it will be correct in the sense that it complies with the algorithm, but it doesn't mean it's factually correct for real world use.
So what, you know, we always talk about the internet with Section 230 in the US that protects all the companies from being liable for what people post on their platforms. But I think this is more of a liability thing.
I think so too, because this seems to me to be different from protection from what people post on your platform.
Right.
Because this is more about what are you generating based on what people post onto your platform.
Right. So what would happen today if you went to a search engine like Google, which was not using AI, and you said, is it okay to light a cigarette next to an open tank of gasoline? And it unfortunately found a site that said, yeah, that's okay. Is Google liable for that?
That's a really good question.
I mean,
my knee-jerk reaction would be no.
Right.
Because, but then I stop after I say, because, since I have to think about, well, wait, how is it getting the results and how is it ranking them to show them to me?
It's still doing some
it's
manipulation
doing something
with the ranking. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, with Chat GPT, with LLM, it gives you an answer, not a list of results.
Right. That's true.
Which is the big difference here.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
You know, people that aren't us who don't do research into this stuff probably will expect that answer to actually be correct at face value.
Of course they will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have decades of sci-fi TV shows and movies training us to believe that the responses we get from systems like this are correct.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, I remember when I was a kid, there was... once a year, there'd be a story about some seven or eight-year-old kid who had a Superman cape tied around his or her neck and would jump off the roof and break their leg. I don't think they held the TV show liable for that.
I don't think they did either. My dad did that very thing without having a broken bone. Practically gave my grandma a heart attack, so I'm told.
He jumped off the roof with the cape on?
He did. Yeah. Just a young kid. My grandma apparently was standing at the kitchen sink, and there's a window right there. Mm-hmm. And she just sees my dad go whoosh, right past the window.
Oh, I had that happen with a neighbor kid.
And I assume they flew as well as my dad.
Yes. As
oh
well as
goodness.
A rock.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep. Yeah. I just was watching cartoons, saw red and blue fall right down from the window above me.
Yep.
My neighborhood clearly wasn't as fun as your guys' neighborhood. I mean, I grew up with seven brothers and sisters. And I don't remember any of us jumping off the roof.
Oh, man. You really
missed out. Expecting
to
fly anyway.
Yeah, when we figured out that one corner of the roof on my house was actually much closer to the ground simply because of the way the yard sloped, and we could climb up the wood pile on the side of the house to get to that point, and then we could jump off and be stuntmen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how we all walked away from that without any broken bones.
Amazing. Well, I'm sure there are many kids who have stories of breaking their leg jumping off a roof, but most, I guess, don't.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It'll be interesting to see how this goes. I can't imagine how you would even legislate this. Or, you know, I don't know. I mean, every time I got on the early access to the Google Bard thing, and every time it puts up a result, it says, basically, these results could be completely goofy.
I mean, it's good that they're doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, from their perspective, I don't think that statement is altruistic. That's clearly a legal CYA thing.
Oh yeah, their general counsel one was like, yeah, you probably want to put a disclaimer here. Mm-hmm. So if anybody takes this stuff at face value, you have deniability.
Does ChatGPT do it? I haven't noticed. Do they have a liability statement when you run it?
I have no idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, while you're looking that up, I'm questioning how the FTC or any other government agency could effectively regulate what's happening with AI and LLMs, because you need to have a deep understanding of the technology. Mm-hmm. While we joke about politicians not having any tech savvy at all, in this case, how can we expect these people, these administrators, these legislators, to have the level of understanding to actually create rules, regulations, or laws that that control how this is operated or used, when the people that truly, truly understand this, holy crap, I'm glad Ben was able to mute. Also, Ben, how many internal organs do we need to start looking for right now? Because I'm sure you either expelled several or ruptured them.
That was a good
all
sneeze.
All of them.
Oh my God. That was impressive. If the sound had been on, I think everyone would be deaf, or at least far more concerned about your welfare than we currently are.
Yeah.
Anyhow, thanks, how can we expect the people that would be responsible for crafting legislation or regulations to be able to effectively do it in a situation like this, where the number of people that truly understand the technology are a very small subset of people in the tech space?
We can't. Yeah. That's the problem.
Yeah. I think, you know, ideally the way that these kind of problems are solved is people in Congress have staff members that have expertise and they do the research and make recommendations. I'm not sure how much that actually happens, but even if you got five people that understood how LLMs work and so on, I'm not sure what they would recommend.
I'm assuming a lot of what would be recommended, and this is the cynic in me coming out, It would be things that favor and protect the companies that are producing this technology, because right, ultimately, where will you have to go to find the people that can help you craft the legislation? It's the people that are actually creating and controlling the technology. And of course, they're going to do their part to make sure that whatever legislation or regulations are crafted favor them.
Right. Unless you get, you know, some congressperson in the U.S. anyway, that would get EFF or something, somebody to try to take a position. But I think mm-hmm. you're right. The big corporations have too much money with lobbyists and experts that they can loan to the members of Congress, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's exactly what would happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm interested to see what comes out of this investigation. Having not read the Verge piece, do we know what sort of time frame we're looking at for when OpenAI has to get information back to the FTC, or is this an investigation where they have to do in-person testimony?
I don't think it has those details. Everybody declined to comment.
Yeah.
And because, of course, they did.
Yes. They'll get back to them just as soon as Skynet rises.
Right? Yeah. They'll respond after they feed all the information into ChatGPT, and it tells them what to say. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a recursive situation you don't want to get into.
Right?
It might create a black hole or something.
You know, on the whole recursive thing, I would love to know more about what the companies that are creating these LLMs are doing to avoid that very problem. Because at some point, your LLM is being trained on data that's being generated by an LLM. Mm-hmm. And we know what happens genetically in animals when you start doing the inbreeding thing, and that quickly escalates. Is that the same sort of thing that we should expect with LLMs and AI when it's being trained on the stuff that it's actually putting out itself?
Yeah. You know, I think chaos theory would say that if you start off with not a great generative engine that creates crap that gets put back in, eventually you sort of disintegrate, right?
No.
Yeah. Eventually your LLM has an eye that drifts this way, doesn't right. have all its teeth, and I actually am going to stop there because I will quickly take this down a path that goes way, way beyond deliverance.
On the bright side, we do have a show title now.
Inbred LLM. I think we do. Yeah. What was it? The Inbred LLM?
Yeah.
Yeah. About the path to deliverance. So when I was a design engineer many, many years ago, we worked on workstations, Unix workstations called Apollos. There was a company, I think in Massachusetts, called Apollo. They mm-hmm. had these really cool engineering workstations. And one day I'm working on a chip and I asked the guy next to me, I said, "So who's the customer for this one?" He said, "Well, it's Apollo." We both sat back and said, "So we're using an Apollo workstation to design a chip for the next Apollo workstation." That was an existential discussion we had.
Yeah.
So,
it feels just slightly Inception.
Inception. There you go. It's Inception.
Yeah.
Chipception.
Chipception. There we go. I'm still totally digging on Inbred LLM. Yeah. Hey, you know what else I'm digging on?
TSO host. Something called TSO host.
Yes, it's like you can read my mind. It's amazing. Okay, what I love about TSO hosts is, despite the fact that they're incredibly tolerant of me, clearly, they are super good at what they do, and they're leveraging what they do so that we can be here for you. So TSO hosts, they do web hosting. They can help you with data streaming and buying domain names. All the stuff that when it comes right down to it, you want to have a partner that can just make it easy for you. That's what they do. And what they're doing is taking that and leveraging it so we can do what we do every single week. We live stream because TSO host gives us that bandwidth to be able to live stream shows every single week. We have a website because they have given us the hosting that we need so we can have a website. They have also given us the server space we need to store the recordings for shows so you can watch or listen at your leisure. Now, it may not sound like a big deal, but when you look at what it would cost us to have these resources, it's something that we just simply wouldn't be able to manage. So the fact that they're being so generous and giving back to the community by supporting us is fantastic. And when I say we would not be here without them, this is not hyperbole. So we really, really appreciate that TSO Host is here. Now, what I do to show TSO Host that I appreciate them is tell you about them on shows. What you can do to show that you appreciate them is go out on social media and thank TSO Host for being here and supporting the British Tech Network. Super easy to do. Please go do that, because that's the kind of feedback that that they need to know that that we all see the value in what's happening here. So please go give them some online love. And then, since they're really good at what they do, when it comes time to buy a new domain name, set up web hosting, all that kind of stuff, why not use TSO Host, because they're really good at it. So here's what you need to do there. Go to their website, find your domain name, add it to your cart, get your web hosting package, add it to your cart, and then add the discount code BTN20. And when you do that, you get 20% off your order. So they're being incredibly generous by making sure the British Tech Network has the resources we need. And they're being generous by saying, hey, you're a BTN fan, you're part of the BTN family, here's a little discount for you just for being part of that. So thank you, TSO Host, for being here and supporting the British Tech Network. All right, people, now comes the part where you can sit back and laugh or cringe as I try and stumble my way through the part that Patrice does with elegance every single week, which is to tell you where you can find the chat room that we use when we're live streaming, so that you can find the links to articles we talk about, to the cool things we're about to discuss, and any other side chats that are happening during the show. Okay, so to find the chat and get into it, go to chat.britishtechnetwork.com, and from there you can get signed in, and then you can be part of the discussion while shows are happening. Now, if you happen to hop in there when we're not recording, it's kind of a quiet place because we use that for the live shows. But if you want to see what happened on a live show, if you're watching a recording from a previous episode, there's a separate place for that. And that is BritishTechNetwork.com/chat. See, what I tried to do here was be a little prepared ahead of time and find the links that I should just know off the top of my head, and then just have tabs right here. So all I have to do is click on them, and then I can just read it to you. And even still, I'm managing to click on the wrong tabs, and I wasn't seeing the URLs as expect. Anyhow, this is one of the many reasons why I really appreciate Patrice. Ooh. Okay. Anyhow, finding the transcripts from previous shows, what you do is go to BritishTechNetwork.com/chat, and then there's this really cool looking calendar there. And find the date for the episode that you're interested in. So, like, today would be July 13th
of July.
Yes, 13th July 2023. And
yeah, remember, we're dealing with British people, so we have to have the date backwards with the day first.
Or from the rest of the world's perspective, we have to say it frontwards instead of the U.S. backwards way. I know, it's all a matter of perspective. No matter how we do the date, it will be backwards for someone. Anyhow, So the day of the month is 13. The month is July. The year is 2023.
And this here is Babylon 5.
And the station is Babylon 5. Oh. Yeah. Hey, I'm looking forward to, at some point, seeing the animated feature that they made. Just because I managed to work my way through all five seasons of the show. And so I feel like I'm kind of obligated to watch that now. Anyhow, so BritishTechNetwork.com/chat. Find the date, click on it, and then you'll see the chat that we had. You can find all the links and the rest of the discussion. And now, once again, I have proven exactly why every single week when Patrice is here, at this point, I would have said, so Patrice, would you mind telling us where people can find the chat room?
Patrice is not in fear of losing her job, Jeff. That is clear.
Patrice has solid job security. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. All right. So we have managed to get through that together. And when I say we have managed to get through that together, you have all managed to survive me doing that, which means now it's time to do some cool things. And Ben, you were in first. So tell us about your cool thing.
Well, there is the first half of a not new show that has dropped on Netflix. That is called The Witcher, and you must toss a coin to him. If it seems familiar, there was a Eastern European book about this, which was then adapted into 3 very successful video games, which has now been adapted into a Netflix series since 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's the first half of season 3 is definitely the setup, but the trailer has anything to say. The second half, which drops on July 29th, will be completely insane.
Now, I haven't watched The Witcher, like any of the seasons, but right. I know people really love it. I've seen stuff about how this is Henry Cavill's last season on The Witcher, but the series is going to continue. Is that right?
Yeah. From my understanding, they're going to be kind of doing some Whovian type things going on there.
Okay. So we might get to see some regeneration action.
Well, sort of. From my understanding, Liam Hemsworth's, not to be confused with his two brothers, Thor.
Oh, right. And Liam is the one that wasn't Thor and wasn't in Westworld. Yes. This is the other one.
Yeah, he was the one who was in The Expendables for about 20 minutes.
So he truly was expendable.
Yes. Yeah, but anyway, my understanding is that they're going to be kind of using the whole multiverse aspect of The Witcher, where essentially they'll both be Geralt, I can't talk today, but Liam's version may be a different version of the character.
Okay, so this will be like the Kelvin verse version of the character.
Yeah, that works a lot better than my analogy.
Well, you had to set it up so that I could distill it.
Yeah, this would be as if Chris Pine's Kirk went out and replaced Paul Wesley.
Okay.
Next season.
Which would be kind of interesting. Yeah, Paul Wesley's kind of growing on me.
Or as I say, what happened to O'Brien in DS9?
Single most important person in Starfleet history, turns out.
Mm-hmm.
Chief Miles O'Brien. Yeah. All right, so Witcher, it's on Netflix. Cool. And
I think Tom will be telling us what else is on Netflix.
Right.
I guess this is Netflix today. I do have a couple of short things. One is I want to shout out to my nephew, Colin, who was the one that turned me on to Immaculate Grid, the baseball Wordle game a couple of weeks ago that we talked about and Jeff tried to play. And thank you, Jeff, for giving it a go. It was quite fun. And he listened to it and he enjoyed it so much. He's now a subscriber to the show. So thanks,
welcome,
Jeff.
So glad you're here, and I'm so glad that I was able to use my ineptitude to bring some entertainment and joy into your day.
You just keep growing that subscriber base, Jeff. I think you're a real pro.
Yeah, I'll keep growing that subscriber base one idiot comment at a time.
And by the way, Immaculate Grid was so popular. It's all the rage with baseball players, you know, major league players and stuff. It actually got purchased already.
Wow.
I don't know how much, probably not that much. The second thing, I was going to pick this, but if you're doing a road trip, you know what you need, you know, Google Maps, Apple Maps, they're great. You still need maps. You know, you still need a printed map. It is so hard to plan a, you know, 1500 mile, 2000 mile road trip, you know, step by step in Google. You just don't ever get the perspective. So long live paper maps.
There's definitely some value for those of us that know how to use them in having paper maps.
Right. And they give them to you for free at in certain places.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, my pick is the Netflix show called The Days. It's an 8-episode series. I think it's just this year that they made it, very recently. It's about it's a Japanese made show about the people working at the Fukushima nuclear plant in 2011, when the earthquake and tsunami and the near meltdown at the nuclear power plant happened.
And okay.
Which, you know, it's a crazy potential tragedy, but I was always interested in exactly what happened. You know, I know the tidal wave came in and knocked out the power, and, you know, that has obvious implications of how you run a nuclear power plant. But it was interesting. I was interested in actually how the people that worked there got through all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And my only caution about the content, the subject, I think, is very interesting. They did a good job, but it is a Japanese style series. So
everybody dies.
It moves slowly. You know, it's very Japanese. It moves slowly. It's a little bit over the top emotionally occasionally. I have to admit, I had to fast forward through some of the scenes, some of the more emotional scenes. And they do the thing, which is it's very realistic. When people are discussing a difficult problem, there's not a problem for people that are talking to each other to just stop talking for like 3 or 4 minutes. And the conversation's not over. People are just thinking, and you don't have to say, well, let me think about that. You just stop talking and think, and you start talking again when you're ready. But when you're watching a show that has that, it's like, what's going on? These two guys are on a video conference, and the guy just stopped talking for, you know, like 30 seconds. So that can be a little bit tough. And my other recommendation is to, if you can handle it, view it with the original Japanese audio with English subtitles, as opposed to doing English dubbing.
My preference for watching non-English TV shows and movies is to always subtitle.
Yeah, because you don't hear, you know, the inflections in the voices and what the voice really sounds like, and that's part of acting, right? Is the voice.
Right. Yeah. And for some shows, the translations are, the spoken translations are so bad.
Yeah.
That it actually ruins the show.
And that's the case here. I know a little Japanese, not enough to hold a real time conversation, but I know enough that I played it both ways a couple of times. It's like, well, that's kind of right, but that's not really what he was saying, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, if you don't mind fast forwarding a little bit, it kind of walks you through the whole thing, and it blew my mind what those guys went through. Now, it's not a documentary, so I'm not sure, you know, I'm sure not everything is 100% correct. It's based on facts, all that kind of stuff.
But yeah, the Chernobyl miniseries.
Right.
It was a drama, but based on the facts.
Right. I think it's that's a good, very good example.
Cool. All right. Well, I feel kind of lame because I didn't bring a Netflix show. I brought an Amazon Prime show instead.
Oh, you're no. out of here.
You're zagging, man. We were zigging. You're zagging here, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm just keeping it fresh, yes. Mixing it up.
Yeah. Yeah, we are slaves to the MPTP.
Yeah. Oh, anyhow, my pick. I went Amazon Prime this week. It's the final season. So season 4 of Jack Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jack Ryan series, the first season was just so good. And then every season after that is just ridiculous, but yeah. fun. And so this final season, you know, it's the same formula. There's a crisis. It's going to be a world crisis. Mm-hmm. And the only person that will be able to stop the crisis is Jack Ryan, with the aid of a couple friends. And they have to go on this world hopping adventure mm-hmm. to save the world. Yeah. And that's exactly what's going on in this season as well. It's just a fun series.
Yes.
And we are 4 episodes in to this final season.
6 now.
Wait, really?
I think new episodes came out today.
I thought we were 4 into Jack Ryan and 5 or 6 into the Marvel one, Secret Wars.
Yep, 5 for Marvel with Jack Ryan. At least the first 2 weeks, they released 2 episodes at a time.
Oh, okay. Well, anyhow, so there's several episodes out, and I am incapable of keeping track, which makes sense because right now I have to keep track of Jack Ryan, Secret Wars, Strange New Worlds, and well, as of tomorrow, Foundation.
Oh yeah.
Because that starts tomorrow. And I think there's another show I need to keep track of. Oh, I was keeping track of Silo, but they finished right. that season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How did you like the last episode of Silo?
The last episode of Silo.
Yeah, mm-hmm. me too.
I enjoyed that the various collection of hypotheses that I had concocted to explain different things. Didn't match up with where the story was actually going. So that, to me, that was a really pleasant surprise.
Yeah, I agree. I had the same experience.
Yeah. And I have gone back and watched the first few episodes again, mm-hmm. and they're much easier to watch having the information that you have later mm-hmm. on, mm-hmm. watching them that first time without the information, it was very difficult for me to keep engaged in the show because everything felt far too contrived. Mm-hmm. And it really, so in retrospect, they were working way too hard to make everything feel creepy and mysterious.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably true.
Yeah, and having the knowledge of what you get in later episodes when you go back and watch the earlier ones again, it makes it a much more palatable show
mm-hmm.
because it's easier to overlook the ham-fisted, there's something going on and you don't know what it is thing.
Right, you're right. The first, when I was watching them, I was trying to pay attention to each and every little thing to see how everything added up, and then like you said, when you finish it, you realize half that stuff was really not essential to remember.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyhow, so apparently it was, here's what you need to watch, Cool Things edition.
That's right.
Yep. And for Jack Ryan, what I really like about the final seasons of the series, they seem to be really putting stuff in a position to where you would know the characters in the movies.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't really thought about that, but okay. Yeah.
Because I think that's exactly why the series is ending. I think Paramount wants to take this version of Jack Ryan
And go big
to the big
screen.
screen. Yeah. Because you already have the spin-off movie Without Remorse.
Yep.
Yeah. Which you have a huge marketable star there in Michael B. Jordan. Yeah, we now have Ding Chavez. So I have this feeling we might be having a hunt for a submarine in the near future.
That would be cool. I would enjoy that.
Yeah.
Only if Sean Connery plays the
Well,
Admiral
he's got the
Captain.
right accent for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Ben, where can people find you?
Well, Jeff, you can find me on all forms of social media because I pretty much am on all of them. Same username at Ben Rathig. You can find me on Rathig.tech for my written opinions, except for on any Meta platform that thinks I'm spam. Zuck, we gotta talk. And lastly, you can find me Tuesday nights on Mac Voices of Chuck Joyner. Thursday nights, aka tonight, or Friday morning in the UK with on In Touch with iOS with Dave Ginsberg. And you can find me every Thursday and Friday here for the Big and Mac shows. Not together, because that would actually make me hungry.
Yeah, and could clog your arteries.
Yes.
And Tom, where can people find you?
People can find me primarily on Mastodon. I am Tom F at sfba.social and in the BTN Slack.
Awesome. All right. So you can find me on all the various social medias as J Gamut. And yes, I am on Thread or Threads now. And I find it incredibly funny that that Meta, Facebook, whatever, chose to name their social media, new social media service, the same thing as what apparently is one of the most disturbing nuclear post-nuclear Holocaust movies or series made in the UK. And
Oops.
so it's basically just triggering all of our UK friends. And yeah, so now I kind of want to go and watch the Threads series and see what traumatized all of our British friends so much. Here in the US, we had our mini series that was traumatic like that was what was it called? The Day After?
Day after tomorrow.
Day After Tomorrow. Yeah. And I remember watching that as a kid and just being horribly traumatized. I mean, I was already like all the other kids freaked out because we were certain that that we were about to die in a nuclear holocaust. And then we watched this TV show and it's like, well, might as well have cake for breakfast.
All you had to do was duck and cover, Jeff. It wasn't that hard to avoid it.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We knew to hide right under those desks. Yep.
Duck and cover.
Good
Duck
times.
and cover. Yep, I saw those films in school.
Yep. Did I tell people what shows to find me on? I can't remember.
Yep.
Think
Think
okay,
so.
good. All right. If I miss something, Google me. I'm easy to find.
Yeah,
And
if Jeff didn't say it, just do what I said and add the context machine with Brian Chaffin.
there you go. Yes. All right. So with that, this has been so much fun. Thank you for spending part of your Thursday with me. And everyone that's watching or listening live, thank you for spending part of your Thursday with me as well. I'm glad that we have this time together. It's just really nice. Yeah. So for those of you that are watching or listening later, hey, thank you for being part of this as well. Everyone, all of you that are part of the BTN family, you all rock. TSO host, thank you for being here and supporting us. Give them some online love, please. And let's see. The Daily News Show. I haven't mentioned that recently. Please go check it out. It's fantastic. Kyle is awesome. Make sure to throw some money towards the show as well so we can keep that going. Cha-ching. Ewan, thank you for being you. Muller, thanks for making sure we have people for all of the shows. And I think that's about it for today. So thanks again, everyone. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow for the Mac show. And then join us again next week for the big show and the Mac show again. And everyone, have an awesome weekend.